There he is. Are you ready, Shelly? Okay. All right, I'll go ahead and call to order regularly scheduled the Board of Supervisors meeting February 2nd. If the audience would join the board in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay.
Public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody move towards the mic.
Mr. Chair, this is not a public comment to the public, but I'd just like to acknowledge that the month of February nationally has been recognized as Black History Month. By many years of teaching, I used to dedicate time during that month to point out certain significant contributions of African Americans to the American culture. And so there will be a lot of different activities, whether it's the city library or within the community, that will focus on some of the African Americans that have made contributions. So I just ask the public to stay tuned to some of the events and happenings as we reflect on contributions of African Americans in American society.
Very good. Thank you. Our employee recognition that we would have done today, we'll get on the agenda for next week. Consideration of minutes from January 26th.
Move approval.
Second.
The motion is second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. No personnel actions. Consent agenda, we need to add a utility permit, 1648.
Move approval with no changes.
Second.
The motion is second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Additional items. Discussion and consideration of capital assets policy after the 7-day review. Ms. E. Martin? Lieutenant Schneider. And Commissioner of Elections.
Ooh. Yes, there are two elections going on today, so that's fun. I'm bringing back the capital asset policy after 7-day review. I did send this out to all department heads and elected officials. I received three comments before this morning's meeting. Two of them had to do with the dollar range for items listed on physical inventory. You might remember this also came up during the purchasing policy. So, and they were from the bigger departments who have the most physical inventory and therefore the most burden to keep all of this in order. Facilities had asked to raise the range to $1,000, and the Sheriff's Office made a comment, wouldn't mind seeing that raised to $2,500. So I looked through all the physical inventory of all the departments and offices, and here's what's falls into that $501 to $1,000 range. And those are firearms, tactical vests, computers, laptops, cameras, tablets, power tools. Those are all canoes, file cabinets, desks, and desk chairs. So you might notice that a lot of those are pretty portable items. Just so you know what those items look like in that dollar range.
Sure.
I didn't look in the 1,000 to 2,500. I did look in the 500 to 1,000 range.
It was 500 to 1,000. So even if you hypothetically moved it to 1,000, those items, would they still need to be reported?
They would all fall off mandatory reporting.
All for mandatory reporting.
Yeah. I did add to this asset policy that and this is something I do in my office because, say, my election laptops, those came in just under $500, but they go out to the public. They're very portable, so I tag all of those so I know where they are. So so those are all the items that you would lose if you raised the dollar threshold. So I'm just putting it out there to you to take that into consideration. Just know that if you do change that, we will also have to revise the purchasing policy as well, and I think the financial policies too.
Okay, so I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot.
That's
so
why I'm here.
Practical, looking at this, does it change a lot for you? That means any more, because this is self-reporting. This is stuff that they have to look at, and then send you the document or sign off on this is.
Right. There are hundreds of items would fall off the list of mandatory reporting if you change the dollars. So
How do you capture those? Do you, is there a way to still have an accounting form, or is it necessary to account?
Only if the department or office chooses to do that. And it would be up to the individual office or department to choose to account for those or not.
Okay, now the tough part is, what do you feel is a comfortable policy? If you...
Well, I brought the $500 mark. That's where our... Doing the visibility inventory every year, talking to the state auditors every year for our annual audit. That's what I would consider appropriate, but this is a county policy, so
I am really, really appreciative, especially from the departments that have so many, departments and offices that have so many items that fall in that $500 to $1,000 range specifically. But I think it is completely appropriate for us to continue to monitor and track those items. I understand it creates a little more work occasionally when we have to go through and do the tracking, but these are all public goods. They're public dollars being used, and I think tracking the items that are valued above $500 is completely appropriate. I'd recommend that we stick with what it is. With all appreciation to those who made the comments, I recognize it is a little more work. I just think it's appropriate more work.
Ultimately, the three of us are the stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and how they're spent. Mm-hmm. And if it's burdensome for those public officials that are also charged with washing out for the taxpayers' dollars, then I'm sorry for that, but that's why they have staff on hand and I think it's fully appropriate also that we leave that $500 threshold right where it's at.
Well, you look at the, just do it dollar for dollar. You look at the man hours that we have to put in to count these items. You don't have to lose very many $500 items before you've more than paid for whatever personnel time you've got to put in to track them.
Absolutely. So you want to make a motion?
I'll move that we approve the policy after 7-day review as it was originally presented to us 7 days ago.
Second. So the motion and the second. Any further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That's been approved. Thanks, Lucy.
Oh, sure. I just want to make one more comment, which was the physical inventory card. Margaret James, Environmental Health Director, asked that we make that a fillable form, and I thought that was a great idea. So we're moving forward with that. I don't have that to present today, but that...
That doesn't require action from us, though.
No, but I just thought that we did get useful comment about that. I mean, I totally understand the dollar comment, but we did receive three comments, so I wanted you to hear all of them.
Yep. So, and I would ask, Mr. Chairman, that you reach out to the department head, the elected official, who requested that we raise the limit, just with our rationale for why we did.
Right. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Lucy.
Okay, our next two items, discussion and consideration of asset recommendations and the discussion of the Story County detox service funding have been moved to, the first one's been moved to the 16th, so the asset will be on the 16th. The detox discussion will be on the 9th. And that's due to the weather and road conditions today.
That's 19. Okay.
And the next item is discussion and consideration of the communications/marketing and strategies. Dan, she's already there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It was actually a year ago today that I was here with the 2015 communications. What is before you today for consideration is in content, essentially the same with modifications to the strategies, but there are some modifications. I want to go over those briefly because if you looked at compared last year's communication plan to this one, you would think that there are two different, entirely different documents. First of all, as you see on the right, for this communication plan, the entire format has been modified. Previously, it was a landscape format. What I've done is created it so that it matches the same branding that we've had with everything else, the CIP, the C2C plan, the strategic plan. I'm just having a consistent message from Story County. Pretty minor, but for someone looking at this from the outside, I could see why they would say it's a whole different approach. If you see in the middle there, it has four sections, historical overview, goals, target audiences, and strategies. Again, very similar elements to what we have right now as the adopted plan. And then there's this little blurb, which is new, But just a kind of an overview of why we have this plan. This is the third year that I brought a communication plan to the Board of Supervisors. And I think it just shows our target audience is why the board has established this one, to have a timely, so we communicate what we know, when we know it, openly provide public information in a way that's easy to access and understand, and proactively engage our customers and stakeholders before being asked to provide information to determine future needs. So with that, the goal sections, section number two, again, these are the very same five goals that were initially put in place in 2014. Transparency in county government accessibility through duration of projects or issues. Next is sharing our vision with general public and decision makers. Third, improving communications between the board and the constituents. Fourth, ensuring public and county employees have factual information. And lastly, providing emergency response communication.
Well, can we go back to that one?
Yeah.
I just saw on that next to last bullet point. That'd be great if we could ensure that everybody had factual information, but we can't. Can we ensure that they have access to factual information?
Yep.
The number of times I get frustrated that people don't have factual information would make your head spin.
They have access to factual information.
Ensure the public and the county employees have access to factual information.
Target audiences, same five. Oops, sorry. I forgot I had animation in here. Same five as past 2 years, county employees, public officials, general public, the media, and then the others. The others are, you know, our travelers are passing through on Highway 30, Interstate 35, here for the Iowa games, whatever it may be, is the other target audience. So in the draft plan, there are 20 strategies. And it is very difficult to read up there. Many of these are the same ones that we've carried forth. Some did drop off this year, such as the Box City Festival that we do with Nevada Community School District. That's once every 4 years, as well as Leadership Nevada, the county government session. That's once every 2 years. What has been added is the annual report, second to the bottom, and the legislative priority summary. Those are two items we started last year as a county, and so it is an outreach tool. And then nine down from the top, like right in the middle there, we have the KHOI monthly radio updates that I started last fall, and still will keep on doing those the second Monday of each month. So the strategies are on the left-hand side, and then the target audiences are on the right, obviously. If there's an X, that is to whom that strategy is designed to meet those goals that have been outlined. Really, though, it would be a fair statement to say all these strategies are targeted at all five audiences. That would be our ultimate goal. The delivery may vary slightly with depending on what target audience and the message. So with that, I do recommend adoption of the proposed plan. As modified from the 2015 plan, and then with Rick's comments for the fourth goal there. And I would be glad to answer any questions.
Prior to the vote to approve or not approve the revised plan, is it feasible, or do you think it would be feasible that sometime during the calendar year, that some of our more high-profile departments might just come in part of a public forum and just give us a little update on their interaction with the public, the kinds of requests that they've had. Do they see that they are, that this type of communication plan is extremely helpful as we move forward? You know, I think this is more than just a communication from the Board of Supervisors. You know, I look at the agencies that really have more direct contact with the public, whether it's P&Z, whether it's environmental health, whether it's secondary roads, the auditor's office, you know, conservation. I'm just
somehow, if it's a countywide plan, we would like to, either as part of our staffing, when we have our departmental staffing, we need to mention this, bring it up, try to see if people can share with us. Is it helpful in some way? Are they, because to me, the public, if they are aware that we're making a concerted effort to really enhance communication, you're going to hear feedback from that. And I'd like, and not that we necessarily do a survey, but sometimes you can do a survey. I know the assessors used to do a survey, you know, to get public response to things. Just want you to mull that around a little bit. Not that I have to have an answer today, but if you think this might be something that we ought to incorporate, I think it would be, I can see some value.
At the minimum, I definitely will add it to the agenda for the next staff meeting to go over the specifics of it and then address what you mentioned.
Okay. Yeah, Wayne, I think it's a great point. I mean, so you look at where we were 6 years ago in terms of the outreach that we were doing as a board on behalf of the county, and basically with one or two exceptions, every one of those is a new initiative that we put forward. And so I'm really thrilled with the foundational elements of our efforts to communicate. But I think, Wayne, an assessment of the effectiveness of some of those things is completely appropriate. I think we've grown this to the point now that it is time to start to figure out how we're going to assess this for its effectiveness. But overall, I look at that and I say, it is reasonable for somebody to not get information from the county. It's not reasonable for us not to make the effort to provide the information. I think we are trying to provide the information. And now let's just try to find a more streamlined, effective way to get it done.
Yeah.
Good job. And with that, I'd move approval as presented.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the communications and marketing plan.
With the slight amendment.
With the slight amendment, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Shoot.
Aye.
That's been approved. Thanks, Leanne.
Good job, Leanne.
Yep.
No agency reports. Department reports. Environmental Health Quarterly Report. Margaret James. Environmental Health Director. Thanks for coming over.
The chairs are like loosest to move.
Margaret, before you get started, I don't know if you listened to budget audio, but we did have the conversation with the sheriff about the possibility of securing the vehicle that he's currently driving, which is due to be rotated out of in FY17 for your department.
Yeah, I conversation.
Okay, perfect. I just want to make sure you were aware that we had that conversation.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, I think I accidentally just added a slide, but we'll work with that. So good morning on a snowy day. On the way in, the car in front of me did a 180. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so I get a gold star for not turning around like Shelley recommended.
Gold star for Margaret.
Gold star for Margaret. Septic, we did good this past year. This is 2015 numbers, 84 total. A lot of those were the Cameron Estates permits that came up, and then also some of the Hickory Groves. For wells, we plugged 29 new wells, 8 of those water, 23 pluggings, 5 rehabs, 152 samples, and 45 kind of transfers. Just recently, in the past month, Boone County and Linn County called us to learn about our programs and how we do time of transfer well inspections. A lot of folks have not had that, and it's a really good program, so it's kind of, it feels good to have people coming to us for advice on that. Grants to counties, we have a balance of about $12,000 right now till the end of this fiscal year. The picture, I just thought this was an interesting example. The pipes you see on the right, that's the a jet pump going, there's a well right there where those pumps are, and the thing to the left that's not a tree root, that's actually a gas line. So very, very dangerous if someone were to do that, and that's why we're not allowing buried wells. They have to be up above the ground surface. Let's see. So for enforcement, it has all been about Crestview this past month. I've spent a lot of time working on Crestview with calls, letters, and DNR and all that. But as far as other things, we have one overdue time of transfer binding agreement, 10 notice of violations. A lot of those still on hold till the weather gets better. New NOV for Crestview for the water supply. There's still that outstanding one because they have three vacant trailers, but I think they have to work with the treasurer's office to get that paperwork squared away. Oh, let's see. We had a septic system, did a beautiful job, but they put the wrong materials in, and I'm making them rip it out. He was not a certified contractor. He said he had someone overseeing him. He did not. So this spring they have to rip it out and put a new one in. That took a lot of time. There was a lot of angst involved with that, but I think it is what it is, you know. Complaints. We received a gal that wasn't happy with the solid waste, how Cullen's handled solid waste. A lot of Crestview letters. We received one call about odor from DuPont. A complaint about ISU dairy manure land management or manure land application. And ISU does not necessarily even have to file a manure management plan. They can kind of do what they want because they are an educational and research institution. So we're watching that. We're helping them keep an eye on that and just work with them. And then the lead house is selling in Gen Falls, so I got a complaint on that.
I think it's did it sell?
I don't know.
It's in the process of.
I think it, yeah. But they'd have to disclose that. You know, but again, we're out of the lead business now, so it's off my. Let's see. I participated in the Slater Source Water Protection Program. So letters and brochures went out to all septic owners within the focus area. And so we ran, and this was just by chance, we ran into a septic system that was very close to the city water wells. And they have no system. They just go right to the drain tile, you know. And so we started taking, so I sent out a letter saying that he had to switch to city sewer because he's within 200 feet of that. The interesting thing, though, we just kind of fell into that one because when we were researching it, we were using an old set of sewer maps. And so we thought he was on the very outer ring. And now the new map shows line past him. So usually you look and you think, well, everybody within the city limits with all these lines, they're hooked together. I mean, they're hooked to sewer. But, you know, it's where those rings are added, you miss some. And so those are the ones that we have to make a closer study of. So the green check marks are the ones that have submitted their updated sewer maps to us this year. And we're still, I'll have to send another round of letters to those other guys so that we can take a closer look at those.
Margaret, what's our role in this Slater issue versus the city of Slater's role?
Mm-hmm. Well, Slater has it on the books, but they require it only if it's gravity. And this is going to have to be a pump system, okay? So we get involved. If you're within 200 feet of a sewer line, we or the state can require them to hook to city service. Okay. The city can turn around and refuse that service. That's a whole other problem. But usually we work well with the city. They want the business. So this is going to be a tricky one. I've heard that he's a tough customer to work with. So
is it the likelihood of added pollution that's going to be impacting the city, or what?
You know, well, when we did the, you know, we just kind of took a look at all possible contamination that would affect or impact the Slater well, okay? Right. This is a real simple one because it's flat and there's no creeks or rivers going through it. So that's why it's just circles, okay? And so we were looking at lust sites, we were looking at septic systems, abandoned wells, and then businesses like the co-op, there are businesses that could potentially pollute their wells. So it was quite an effort. There were about 8-10 people that would show up pretty, you know, regularly to talk about this. And then there's a document produced. DNR put some money toward it. And each city is supposed to be doing this Whether it helps or not, I don't know. But I think it does, because we caught that one guy. I wouldn't have caught him, you know, with an incomplete septic system real close to the city well. So
is it,
that was worth it right there.
So I think what I'm curious about is it board ultimately enforcement? This gentleman says, no, I'm not tying on.
Uh-huh.
Does enforcement reside with the Board of Supervisors? Does it reside with the Board of Health? Does it reside with the state?
Board of Health.
It resides with the Board of Health. Okay.
Yes.
All right. So our role in this, this is informational for us.
Correct. Yeah. Only something I do is Board of Health, except for well permitting.
Well, but we're responsible for passing ordinances.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Well, in a sense, then it is Board of Supervisors, because
we have the ordinance on the 200. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm curious, and maybe it's unnecessary, but it's a snowy day, and I'm curious of what the process is. If this gentleman just says, no, I'm not doing it, what's next?
Mm-hmm. Well, then I contact legal, and they help me with a citation. But, you know, we will work with them for a long time. That's
sure.
Just what we do. And then if push comes to shove, it would be a citation with a possible fine if he doesn't do what he has to do.
But the Board of Supervisors' role, at some point, a Board of Supervisors passed an ordinance that says if you're within 200 feet, you have to tie on. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. With authority's discretion. So if it's going to cost them $60,000, we could say, well, do that or put in a new septic system, which would cost $10,000.
Right.
Okay, so there is a little wiggle room there.
And I would imagine the potential impact would matter to you. So, for example, you said this is really close to the water source, right? I would imagine if this were out in the middle of nowhere with no real impact on anything, it wouldn't necessarily rise to the level that you and the Board of Health would have to take it on.
I agree. Yeah. That's an important one. I agree. So for trainings and meetings, the three of us went to the regional DNR meeting. I attended the drug use recognition training. That was quite an eye-opener for me. We're meeting, budget workshop, IOWWA, all three of us went to that to get our continuing education for our certifications, conceptual review, EPI that Leanne orchestrated, and then EcoFlow. This is just kind of an interesting thing. They're moving away from peat moss to cocoa shredding for these new little units that they're moving in. So it's a byproduct of the coconut industry, so it's already kind of there. They used to just burn the coconut, and so peat moss is a renewable, kind of a non-renewable resource. So that's kind of a new thing in the technology. It's really cool, I think. And then, you know, I just want to mention we got Stephanie Jones on board. She went to the budget workshop with me. She's just a real nice addition to both our departments. Just really glad to have her. We got a good one.
Good.
Hickory Grove update. So 9 were under that grant. 8 systems are in. And 1 more for this spring, and he is going to do it.
That's everybody then?
Well, everybody except for one who, okay, there's these guys that went to a pipe that had the laundry brightener showing, and then this one guy that's not on that pipe, so we couldn't technically say, yes, you are a polluter, you know? So everybody here, but not this guy, and he happens to be the closest one to it, and no record of the system. So sent down a letter, haven't heard back. So we'll see. Still working on it. Back to the end of the fiscal year. Price range on the systems range from $7,000 to $12,000. A lot of that depended on if they needed a pump. Paul already knows about this. We talked about this a lot last time. Left side in Nevada, the old Dairy Queen used to have. It's got a leaking underground tank. Kerr McGee went out of business but left money for some cleanup. This one wasn't caught because it closed before they were required to register the leaking underground storage tanks. So then this guy went to sell, and that's when this all came about, that they learned that this is a problem tank. still in the ground and leaking, and you can see the plume there. But so like toluene and benzene, those kinds of things that are known carcinogens, have contaminated the groundwater and the soil on their lot, and then the lot south, which has been for a very long time a child care.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. So,
what was at the Dairy Queen site before it was a Dairy Queen? Was it
the Deep Rock gas station?
Oh, okay.
For years.
Oh, all right.
So, and stories have it that, you know, you could smell it there for a long time. Everybody kind of knew there was a problem, but it never got fixed.
Now, did you see that there was a truck up there this week? Some sort of a vacuum type.
Okay. Rig. Are they getting fixed?
Early in the week, somebody was up there doing some sort of work on it.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't see that.
There was a big vacuum truck up there, so. For a couple, 3 days this week. Last week, maybe. Yeah, last week.
I do not believe, and I understand this is not strictly our jurisdiction, but I don't believe that knowing what we know, we can just sit idly by and hope that something good happens. Now, I recognize that the city of Nevada needs to have skin in the game, that the Board of Health has some authority in this, but I think it's also our responsibility. So, you know, we were just told that this thing is leaking some carcinogens with a daycare center right next door. I don't buy that this is one of those that we can just be patient and hope everything works out. I think we need to fully explore what steps are involved in getting this thing cleaned up, what, if any, mitigation there is for whoever has to put in the money. Clearly there's dollars involved in getting it cleaned up, and you may be trying to get blood out of a turnip trying to go to previous owners, or current owner or previous owners. But I don't think it's in the city of Nevada's. It's definitely not in the public's best interest that this thing continue. It's not in the city of Nevada's best interest. It's not in Story County's best interest. And I think when we come across something like this, too many times you see government, well, yeah, we know about it, but it's the owner's responsibility. Yes, the owner's responsibility, but it's creating a public health hazard, especially to these young children who are next door.
Right. So you did make notification to them?
I did contact the owner of the house south and asked her if she was going to do anything. She said that she's only taking care of family related children, okay? And I offered to help at least try to notify the families that had children staying there at one point, because this has been an ongoing thing. And she's perfectly comfortable that the children weren't impacted by this, is what she said.
And based on what? I mean, is she a medical? I mean, based on what?
I
think it demands further exploration with the way it sounds.
So there's an engineer on it, and they're obviously the ones that did the plume map. Sounds like they're out there doing something. I think that they should do a total soil removal for that property.
But I would assume that has to reach a certain threshold before they'll do that.
Yes. And this is a DNR thing. This was more of an informational. We always get a copy of these things for our information. So I just thought, well, you know, let's at least talk to the property owner, see what's going on with that.
It's a DNR thing. I get it. I would ask that the Board of Supervisors work with the Board of Health, maybe the two chairs, the chair of the Board of Supervisors and the chair of the Board of Health, can work together. To draft a letter.
What hats can you wear, sir?
To the DNR, stating our grave concern over this issue,
okay,
and that we're not willing to just have this thing drag on.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing it all over the place, right? You go to, you hate to invoke Flint, Michigan, but once a governmental entity discovers that there is something hazardous to the public, it's not reasonable to just sit back and say, hope it is taken care of, or take your time to take care of it. It's time to get these things taken care of.
Well, and I asked her if they offered to buy her property from her, because I thought that would be the appropriate thing for the owner or the the owner of the problem to do. So the Kermit D pot of money that's available for this cleanup. And she was not interested in pursuing that. But to me, that would be a natural thing. And then maybe, you know, even demolish the house. I don't know.
Well, I just think about as a parent of adult kids now, but when my kids were of daycare age, right? And I don't care if it was a, you know, pseudo family or whatever, if there was something dangerous just across the fence or seeping under the fence, and I didn't know about it, and I'm dropping my kids off there every day,
right?
And somebody, not me, is giving assurances that everything's fine.
Yeah.
And I find out later that local governmental entities knew there was a problem and nobody ever said anything to me, I think I would rightly be livid. Oh, and yeah. My concern is right now we're hearing from this owner of this house who, I'm going to call it a pseudo daycare. He's running this pseudo daycare.
And it's not a certified daycare.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not even getting into that. But what I'm afraid of is we've got no paper trail at all to show that any children who are there, their parents have been notified of this very real issue that we know exists there.
Mm-hmm.
There. How is that reasonable? And I don't know what authority we have to reach out and notify these people or demand that she notify these people, but they have to be notified. They have to be.
How do you suggest we get our hands on that list, though? You know.
Well, yeah, I don't know, but I know that so we're sitting here talking about this right now. It's not reasonable that we don't. I don't know what we can do, but it's not reasonable that we don't do everything we can.
Right.
Let's take this particular incident away and say anything that you determine that potentially could be a public health risk to surrounding property owners or individuals. What is the protocol? What, and as far as notification, and apply that in this case? Because as a Board of Health, there are things that you feel that you have a responsibility if there are potential for environmental concerns or public health issues. So I guess that would be, you know, the calling card here.
Yeah, and really the only thing that I can think that comes to mind is the CAFO notification.
Yeah. Well, if you become aware of a public health nuisance,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, you're the enforcement arm for the Board of Health.
Okay.
I mean, we can notify the owner, but, you know, of the violation, I would assume, and this will take some conversations with the county attorney's office, but we were notified as a courtesy through the DNR.
Correct.
Right. They didn't notify us with the expectation that we were going to do anything other than accept their notification.
Correct.
Right. So I think now the next step would be to have a conversation with the county attorney's office, exactly what, you know, what role does the Board of Health play in this, and the same conversation with the DNR, and okay. See what, you know, okay, what do you do?
I mean, well, we know so what would happen, Paul, what would happen? And I'm sorry I got us so far off of this, but I feel really strongly that something is not happening in as timely a way as it needs to be happening. If we had a rail car accident out here on the railroad tracks just north of Nevada, and a rail car that was carrying these exact same chemicals that are sitting under this ground right here spilled, right? And it spilled onto private property, and let's call it, for the sake of argument, a daycare center.
Right.
What would happen? You think we would be okay with that going on?
Okay, no. And I think part of this is, and I might be making this up, but doesn't part of this have to do with at what level in the ground? I mean, how far down they've detected these chemicals? I mean, I don't believe they've detected them on the surface.
Well, they claim that it's 8 to 10 feet. They said it's 8 to 10 feet to groundwater. I don't know anywhere in Story County where 8 to 10 feet to groundwater. I mean, that's crazy.
Right.
So I don't understand why they're just generally saying that. Plus, when you get a level here, if you don't, it's going to gas off up into right. the, so you'll have the vapor there. You might not have product right there, but you will have the vapors there.
Yeah, we'll have to have more conversations with the DNR and find out what their intentions are, and then find out what role the Board of Health has in that. Because I don't know that the Board of, I mean, yeah, technically we could buy, we could notice the owner of the property, where the Dairy Queen sits now, of the violation. But I don't know what the next step would be as far as the Board of Health.
Okay.
In Fort Floyd. I don't know that the Board of Health, well, I'm sure we do, we would have the authority to take them into court and force them to clean it up.
The current owner.
I would assume.
Be the current owner. Yeah.
And I don't know what authority we would have with the owners of the property to the south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a registered daycare, and simply all that means is that there's, if you have under a certain amount of kids, you don't have to register with the Department of Human Services. I mean, you can watch up to, I don't know, 8 or 9 kids at a time, six kids at a time, and not have to notify the Department of Human Services to provide daycare. So.
All right, so what I'm hearing is contact Story County Legal and talk to them about what steps we should take, and then I should probably draft a letter for your signature
right.
To the DNR.
Yeah, I would be really interested to see what's happening with it.
Okay.
I mean, they're fully aware of where it's located and that there's an occupied residence right south of it. So. So I don't know what authority we have here, but it feels like we got some responsibility. I'm not saying we have any authority at all.
We do have responsibility.
We've got some responsibility. We are aware now that there is potentially cancer-causing chemicals sitting at a minimum underground,
right.
but maybe seeping up onto the ground at a place that we know
right.
children are playing, and we don't know that the parents of those children are aware that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's my biggest question for the attorney's office. The owner of that residence is aware of what's there.
Yes.
So our next step is, so what, you know, what authority do we have, I mean, to force her to turn over a name of, you know, a list of names of parents. So. And we need to make sure that we copy the city in.
And they had, and they did
they got the
get
same
copies
report.
From DNR, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so onward.
Again, pardon.
Miscellany that's going on, Center Grove Orchard update. That since 2009, they submitted an engineering plan, working with Jerry on this planning. And so right now, we found that their house, they're discharging right off to the site. So this week, they're setting a tank, and we're going to treat it as a holding tank, and then they will pump it and then eventually hook into the full larger system that is being engineered for the whole complex here. So this is an interim step that we're making them take to avoid discharge right to the land surface. Cornerstone, they came in for a renewal on their CUP. So I went ahead and just did a review of their septic because they add a lot of people constantly. So we're working with them to get water used to make sure that their systems are large enough to handle what they have in place. The Baptist Church right next to it, you know, DNR put that in. We have no records on that, so that's another project if the winter stays wintry enough. And then the Ames Country Club proposed residential subdivision. That, there's some zoning issues with that. But then also there was a lot of discussion whether or not they should use a package plant versus individual septic systems.
At one time, the city of Ames was going to require them to build a system that
the city of Ames could easily tie into. And this is back, you know, 6 or 8 years ago when there was a proposed project out there. Is the city of Ames still requiring that or not?
They're not requiring it, but they're making it, I think they're designing it such that it would be easy hookup. So all the systems are going to be in the front yard with pipes going. I mean, this is still just really sure. In the preliminary planning. My question for Ames would be whether or not they will make them install that sewer line while the street is being under construction. That would be the smart thing to do. I would still like to see a package plant. The developer said, no, that's too expensive to do it that way. That money comes out of my pocket. And I said, it comes out of someone's pocket, period. So you just have to package it as a turnkey lot as opposed to a lot where you have to put the septic system in. He said, no, you can't. You just can't market it that way. You can't make money that way.
What do you mean by a package plant?
You know, something where the 14 lots would all just flow like a little mini, just like south swap.
Okay.
Where it just all collects, and then there's a small treatment plant, one for that whole group as opposed to 14 individual ones. I don't have a huge problem with, because they will be probably a Vantex on all of them, because it's really lousy soil there. So they would have to be maintained annually by a maintenance contractor for the life of the system. So whether it's here or here, it's going to get the same hands-on.
Okay.
So not a big deal.
Now, isn't the country club's mound system right there?
It is. It's right there. So they're going to remove that. And that'll be, I might try to get an educational thing going for that, because we'll get to slice into that mound and see what the, you know, the golf course grease did and all this stuff. But that's going to go. And then they are either, it'll be an Advantex or another mound or something like that, sort of over by the pool there.
Oh, good, right by the pool.
Yeah.
That's
helpful. And they're thinking of naming one of the roads if they get that far, Curtis, after Larry Curtis.
Larry pushed hard. I mean, he, you know, gosh, as long as I've been in Ames, Larry's been pushing for this subdivision, or a version of this subdivision get done. I think it's completely appropriate if they do that. And I'm actually a proponent. I think that's bad ground out there. That, what is it, 14 acres or something. It's ground that's not really usable for anything other than potentially housing. And I think it can be a really, really good project. I just want to make sure that we do have things done the right way.
Yeah, and it's working, because Ames is involved all the way, obviously.
I think they've planned for that ever since they moved out there.
The first plans I saw on it were from the early 80s. I think there wasn't, so the place was built out there in 71 or 2, and the first plan I saw, actually Gary Thompson put a deposit down to buy the first lot, and this had to have been like 81 or 82.
Yeah.
Now it's gone through multiple incarnations, and now I think it's Chris Gardner that is the developer. And I'm hearing now that he would like to start moving dirt yet this spring. So things are going to have to move pretty rapidly for that to get done. And what we've yet to see anything on we've heard preliminary stuff, right? But we've not seen any zoning, any platting, anything like, I don't know what Jerry's dealing with right now. But.
Right. Well, we had the conceptual review last Thursday. So the next step would be for them to submit a preliminary plat to the city first, and then to the county.
Go to the city first, okay?
Yeah, I think. They're, you know, city, county working together on it. It'll looks like it's going to maybe happen this time.
It has potential to be a really good project, but I'm telling you right now, that corner, Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver, is just going to get tougher and tougher and tougher.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the intersection north of it is not the best intersection.
190th, yeah.
No.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of tough to be. And then one other thing, just yesterday we had the inspector, the guy that does all of Story County and Ames for the food inspections and the hotel inspections. Boy, did he have a lot of interesting stories, I will say that. And so he just kind of told us, you know, what all he does and how many times restaurants get inspected. So they always do a preliminary one. They always respond to complaints, and they try to get their once a year restaurant inspections done, but they're way behind.
Way behind.
Way behind. Interestingly, he also has to do food production, and he has a huge territory for that. So, places that bakeries or places that freeze corn or, all those things are also on his list. They are not allowed to go over 40 hours a week. So, it's either on his own time or it goes by the wayside. So, he was very helpful, and, so bed bugs and anything like that, we call him and it gets going. And then that office also coordinates the foodborne illness things. If they see a pattern, that's they're the ones that hopefully catch that, as well as Story County Public Health. That's all I have.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Margaret.
Interesting.
You're welcome.
Margaret, you're doing a really nice job.
Thank you. Appreciate
Absolutely.
That.
Yep.
Public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on today's agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments in the open requirements of the open meeting law, but may be so in the future. Not see anybody moving to make liaison assignments in committee. Wayne.
Yes.
Pass. I'll pass also. Announcements, Wayne.
Question. We have scheduled for tomorrow annual township trustee meeting.
That's been moved to next Wednesday.
That's been moved. And what about the Marshall story?
That'll be a conference call.
Call.
Because Ken Rody was going to have to come down from Storm Lake or Spirit Lake.
But that tentative is still on the
agenda.
That's
still on for a conference call in the morning.
Nice. Okay. And the only other announcement is that depending upon whether the Iowa Association of Counties Scholarship Judging Committee will be meeting at the ISAC office. We have narrowed 32 original applicants down to a couple individuals from each of the 6 districts, and we will be having face-to-face interviews, one call-in because he couldn't get released from his activity to be there. So we hope to finalize that. And if we can't hold this meeting on Thursday of the 4th, it will be on the 10th as our snow day makeup. So I'm eager and interested in seeing who comes out on top. We had some outstanding applicants. These are children of county employees that are applying for scholarships from the Iowa Association of Counties. Yeah. So other than that, about
keep that in mind, Margaret.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of announcements here in front of me. We had a blood drive here yesterday in this room, and then we got a thank you note from the American Red Cross thanking us for sponsoring the blood drive. 23 presenting donors, and they collected 21 total units. So, and we may look at doing it a little bit differently in the future, so we'll figure that out. And then another announcement, tonight's Ames Open House for the C2C plan had been rescheduled until February 22nd. That was going to be at the library in Ames tonight, so we have rescheduled that to February 22nd from 6 to 7 at the Ames Public Library. And the Board of Health meeting for this afternoon has been canceled.
Okay. And don't forget, today is Groundhog Day. And Punxsutawney Phil is scheduled to see his shadow. So just want you
six
to be
more weeks
six
right?
more weeks of winter. So just
all right.
Be prepared.
There's a cyclone game tonight.
Yeah.
There is. West Virginia.
West Virginia. And so far, let's hope the weather is not going to come back
down. All right.
Okay.
Move adjourned.
Second.
Motion to second. We're adjourned.
All right. Yeah.